Juxtaposition. Two characters are placed side by side for the purpose of developing contrast. Strong versus weak.
Juxtaposition. Innocence versus experience.
Juxtaposition. Thick versus thin.
Juxtaposition. Nature versus nurture.
Juxtaposition. Good versus evil.
Juxtaposition. Light versus darkness.
Juxtaposition.
Juxtaposition. Boo. How many of you knew what juxtaposition was before today? How many of you could spell juxtaposition? I can't. I tried. I typed it probably 7 times this week, and I didn't get it right once. Fortunately for all of us, my computer has spell check, so we got it right every time. Alright? So you got your Bibles open to Genesis chapter 37. We have just finished a series walking through 8 parables, and the reason that Jesus told parables, and what we've been talking about is that you have a part in God's story. You are not the main character in your own life. You have just this little subplot. God is telling a story, and you, through your life, get to tell God's story. You get to tell the things that God has done to the world, to those who you come into contact with. You will get to tell God's story to people I will never meet. And I will tell God's story to people you will never meet, which is awesome because God has done the exact same thing in my life in different ways that He has done the exact same thing in your life. So what we've done is gone through and called it the stories we tell. And what we did is we attached the kind of church that we want to be to that. Today, we want to look in our Bible. We're going to do a 4-week character study on the life of Joseph. The next 4 weeks, we're going to look at Joseph the dreamer, Joseph the victim, Joseph the forgotten, and then finally, Joseph the victorious. Because we have all been in those positions. We have all had dreams, aspirations, things that we thought life was going to look like. But maybe it didn't always look that way. Maybe sometimes through our own fault or through the fault of others, you and I become the victim. Or maybe sometimes we get forgotten. We think no one cares, especially God. And then sometimes we get to live in victory. But what I want us to do before we do any of that is to realize that none of these little bits of story are the story. Like Genesis, let's take a look here. We're just going to go through the very first 36 chapters for you real quick. The book of Genesis is broken up into 11 sections. God created, and then the story of 10 other people. So is Genesis a collection of stories about people? If Genesis is a collection of stories about other people, then maybe the rest of the Old Testament is a collection of stories about people. Then we get to Jesus in the New Testament, and what is that? Jesus is just another character in a long list of characters that we study. The problem with that is that when you look at Genesis through the lens of just a bunch of characters connected together, you are not reading the book of Genesis faithful to the other 65 books of the Bible. You see, this is a book all about one character. Jesus is the only character in the Bible that matters. Every character leading up to the creation account, Adam, Noah, Abraham, Moses, writing at least 1,000 years after, at least 2,000 years after all of this happened, right, pointing to something that was going to happen at least 2,000 years after this. How could he do that unless he was inspired by something larger than himself to say, all of these little stories go together to point us to this one big story. The whole thing is about brokenness, sin, redemption, and restoration. We get to see little bitty pictures of that all the way through. So today, starting today, and then for the next 3 weeks, we're going to look at the character of Joseph, identifying some of the characteristics in Joseph, knowing that this story is not about Joseph, just like your life is not about you. Joseph's story was about Jesus. So the question is, before we begin, is your life about Jesus? Or are you the main character in your story? We started the year looking at, walking through 16 weeks of the book of Ephesians, taking a look at our identity. Who am I? Am I what people think about me? Am I what I have? Am I what I can do? Am I what's happened to me in the past? Am I what might happen in the future? Or am I who I am because I am a son of God? And if I am a son of God, how did I become a son of God? And if that's how I became a son of God, then this story is not about me. So let's take a look through the book of Genesis. Now this story is perfect. This is the perfect outline if you want to be a television writer, right? If you want to write the perfect drama to put on TV, this is the perfect model for you to do. Check this out. The story of Joseph. Joseph is one of the favorite characters in the Bible. His story would fit perfectly on primetime TV. Here are the elements that you need. You need jealousy. You need sibling rivalry. You need betrayal. You need suffering. You need deepening despair. Apparent deliverance that doesn't come. All followed by a dramatic turn of events and triumphant ascension. And then at the end, reunion and restoration. So write that down. None of you wrote that down. Apparently none of you want to be dramatic film writers. Well, all right, well. But that's what you need, and that's what we get inside of the story of Joseph. We get all of this, and then if you think, if you've read much of the scriptures, you read much of the New Testament, you're going to see all of those characteristics played out in another place, right? Bodhi Bhagavan, who's a pastor, he said this about Joseph's story. Our tendency is to look at the story in isolation as though it were one of Aesop's fables with a moral at the end. Here are the morals. Let them hate you. If you're faithful, end up rich, powerful, and vindicated. However, this interpretation not only misses the mark, but it perverts the very message of the narrative in particular and the Bible in general. When you look at this set of stories of Joseph as though it were just about Joseph and those as though be obedient and good things happen to you. It might take some time, but good things happen to you. When you look at it through that, when you read the Bible as though it were this checkoff list of behavior modification stories, oh, if you do this, God will be happy. If you do this, God will be happy. If you do this, God will be happy. You could read the story of Joseph and be completely accurate to chapter 37, 38 to 50, right? You would be completely accurate to the text, but you would pervert the rest of the entirety of Scripture. So what we want to do is take a look at this character, not for what it is or what it seems to be, but for what it really is in the grand scope of the rest of the Bible. To do that, we need to start reading. Here's where the juxtaposition comes in. Moses is going to continually juxtapose this thing versus this thing to point us to this bigger thing. Ready? We're going to start in verse 1. Jacob lived in the land of his father's sojournings in the land of Canaan. And these are the generations of Jacob. Joseph, that's really a funny way to talk about the story of Jacob, right? This is how you know that the story of Joseph is not about Joseph. Because there in verse 2 it says, these are the generations of Jacob. So Moses is writing to tell us about Jacob. He can't tell us about Jacob without telling us about Joseph. Here we go. Joseph, being 17 years old, was pasturing a flock with his brothers. He was a boy with the sons of Bilhah and Zilpah, his father's wives, which is very important for us to know, because He is the son of his father's wives, not the son of his concubines. So he is the legitimate son of Jacob, not the illegitimate son with the concubines. Important. And this is why. If you look through all of the book of Genesis, Genesis comes down to three things. It comes down to land, seed, and covenant. Right? Start with, in the beginning, God created the heavens and earth. He created land. Then he created man and told man to be fruitful and multiply. Gave him dominion over the earth. To be fruitful and multiply, you need seed. And then he made a covenant with that. Told Abraham, leave the land of your father and go to the land I'm showing you. Land. I will make a great nation of you. Seed. Covenant. Anyone who blesses you, I'll bless. Anyone who curses you, I'll curse. Every single time, all through these 11 sections of the book of Genesis, we see land, seed, and covenant. It tells us the land of Canaan that they're living in, the sojourning to the land of Abraham and Isaac. Now Jacob is there. Joseph is his seed, his legitimate seed, not the illegitimate seed from his concubines, but the legitimate seed from his wives. Now, Joseph brought a bad report to them of his fathers. So he's telling on his brothers. Now, Israel loved Joseph more than any of his other sons because he was a son of his old age. And he made him a robe of many colors. But when his brothers saw that their father loved him more than any of the brothers, they hated him and could not speak peacefully to him. Now, Joseph had a dream. When he told it to his brothers, they hated him even more. And he said to them, hear this dream that I have dreamed. Behold, we were binding up sheaves in the field. Behold, my sheaf arose and stood upright. Behold, your sheaves gathered around and bowed down to my sheaf. His brothers said to him, are you indeed to reign over us? Or are you indeed to rule over us? So they hated him even more for his dreams and for his words. Then he dreamed another dream and told it to his brothers. Behold, I have dreamed another dream. Behold, the sun, the moon, the 11 stars were bowing down to me. But when he told this to his father and to his brothers, his father rebuked him and said, what is this dream that you dream? Shall I and your mother and your brothers indeed come and bow ourselves to the ground before you? And his brothers were jealous of him, but his father kept the saying in mind. Now, growing up in church, I was taught this story as though it were about Joseph. And here's what I was taught. Joseph, this prideful, arrogant little kid who was daddy's favorite, who got the coat, kept running back to daddy, telling off his brother. Daddy, 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 here's what my brothers are doing. Daddy, 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 here's what my brothers are doing. And then we see that out of some sort of injustice, his brothers now hate him. The problem with reading it that way is that you don't see that anywhere in the text. Nowhere do you see Joseph standing prideful and arrogant over his brothers. What you do see is Joseph's brothers standing prideful over him. Wait, hold up. What's this? No, no, no. My name is Reuben, and I'm your older brother. If anyone's bowing down to anyone, that didn't happen in my house because I'm 5'7", and my brother's much taller than that. So the older brother did do a lot of bowing down to the younger brother. But in this situation, he had a grown man in Reuben. Hearing from his 17-year-old little brother, one day you're going to bow down to me. And these older brothers are thinking, oh, this is crazy. I don't bow down to anyone, especially. The story that I was told when I was a kid is that the pride lay with Joseph. Joseph was this little tattletale running man. But pride now lies here. So here's the first set of juxtapositions that we see. We see Joseph being the obedient son versus all of his brothers being disobedient sons. Then the second thing that we see is the juxtaposition of the father's love and the hatred of the brothers. Daddy loves me. My brothers hate me. And all of that starts to sound really familiar once you get into the New Testament and start reading the story of Jesus. Right? Because Jesus was the obedient son. And everyone that was a descendant of Adam, or otherwise known as you and me, disobedient sons. So Jesus stands obedient where you and I stand marred, stained by sin. And then what we see is that Jesus is the beloved Son of God, right? God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son, that whosoever believes in him should not perish. He is the beloved Son of God, and God loved him. How did Jesus end up on the cross? His brothers hated him. Why did he hate them? Just like Joseph telling these stories, I had this dream, and not this prideful, I had this dream, because I had this dream. It's kind of strange. Hear my dream. Or Jesus standing and saying, the kingdom of heaven is nothing like you've experienced under these religious leaders. The kingdom of heaven is not about your ability to keep 630 rules and regulations. The kingdom of heaven is that God loved you and moved on behalf of you to invite you into a family and give you an inheritance. And I am that way. And now the religious elite, as we've been hearing through this last series, get angry. They want to beat him. They want to stone him. Ultimately, they end up killing him. Right? So there's this juxtaposition of the obedient son and the disobedient brothers. The loving father and the hating brothers. The crazy part about this loving father, hating brothers in this particular story is that it's just difficult to fathom how Jacob could be a man who would play favorites. Because Jacob saw the damage of playing favorites. Right? Jacob was not his father Isaac's beloved son. Esau was. Esau was the man who was supposed to obtain the promise. But Jacob got the promise. And now here Jacob is, knowing the damage, knowing the sibling rivalry that's created by favoring one son over another. So now what we see is the juxtaposition of Abraham's fatherhood versus Jacob's fatherhood, which we see broken fatherhood passed down to broken fatherhood. So how do we fix this? We need a loving father. So we see that in Jesus. Then we keep reading now in verse 12. And we're going to see just how willing to be obedient Joseph is. Now his brothers went to pasture their father's flock in Shechem. And Israel said to Joseph, are not your brothers pasturing the flock at Shechem? Come, I will send you to them. And he said to him, here I am. So he said to him, go now, see if it is well with your brothers and with the flock and bring me word. So you could logically suppose that earlier when Joseph was bringing a bad report to his brothers, was he being a tattletale? Or, as we see here, dad, knowing his obedient son, sends him off to check on his brothers. And so when he comes back with that bad report, was he being a tattletale? Or was he just doing what dad asked him to do? Right? This picture that's been painted for us for all these years is that prideful little tattletale is really just an obedient son. Bring me word. So he sent him from the valley of Hebron and he came to Shechem. And a man found him wandering in the fields. And he asked him, what are you seeking? I'm seeking my brothers, he said. Tell me, please. Where are they pasturing the flock? And the man said, they have gone away, for I heard them say, let us go to Dothan. So Joseph went with his brothers, after his brothers, and found them in the land of Dothan. So what we see is a picture that you and I could never do with our children. Right? Over here, where Jacob lives, in the Valley of Hebron. Over here, Shechem. No cars, no trains, 50 miles. Could you send your 17-year-old son on a 50-mile foot journey and expect him to come back? Could you expect a 17-year-old to go 25 miles? Could you expect a 25-year-old to do that? Right? This is crazy. So, because of Joseph's obedience, because he is the obedient son, his father sends him to make sure that the disobedient sons. The father has trust in him that his objective will be accomplished no matter the distance. When Jacob says to Joseph, come, I have a task for you, Jacob's answer is, here I am. There are only eight times in the book of Genesis that the phrase, here I am, exists. Three times, the patriarch speaking to their sons. One time, a son speaking to the patriarch, and four times, the patriarch speaking directly to God. Here I am. This is the only time that we see one of the patriarch's sons say, "Here I am." Meaning, no matter what the task is, Dad, I'm ready for it. That's what this phrase means. He didn't wait. Because what would you do? You have this monumental task coming. Dad says, "Son, I need you to do something for me." "What do you need me to do?" "I need you to go to Shechem. That's 50 miles, Dad. 50 miles. Here's what I'm going to need." Then we start to bargain with Dad, right? "Here's what I'm going to need. You need to fast forward time and give me a car. Or you can get a donkey, a camel, give me something, right? And I need some gas money or some munchie money for the candle or for the camel. I want to stop over at the Quickie Mart and I'm going to need some Slurpee money, right? I'll do what you want, Dad, but you need to do what I want." The phrase "here I am" says, no matter what you want, Dad, I'm here to do what you want. We're going to hear in a minute that phrase again. Not necessarily that same phrase, but the same ending meaning. So this is the epitome of obedience. And then, could you count on your 17-year-old son to continue on several miles further when he hears that the brothers are there? Right? "I went the distance. Didn't see anything wrong going on, Dad. I'm back. Really, the flock's okay. I didn't see any danger. Didn't see any problem. You saw the flock?" "Not exactly. They're a little further down the road. You only asked me to go to Shechem. You didn't say anything about Dothan, Dad." "Not. I went to Shechem. I didn't see anything wrong. Didn't see anything right, but I didn't see anything wrong." Right? That's the 17-year-old response. But this persistent obedience, this obedience that says, "I go to the end of the task." So now, keep in mind that phrase, "here I am," and then persistent obedience to see the end of the task. And picture with me for a minute, Jesus in the Garden of Gethsemane, praying, sweating, bleeding from his head. He says, listen, Dad, if there is any other way, take this cup from me. But it's not my will, but your will. No matter what the task is, Dad, I'm down. If there's another way, I'd like for you to choose it. But because of my persistent obedience, I will go all the way. I will finish the task that you sent me for. You see, this story can't be about some little 17-year-old kid named Joseph. Joseph was a very real person. This story is a very real story. This really happened. But not so that you and I had some sort of picture that we need to be obedient, that God asks us to do things and we need to do them. But this points us forward, further into the future. Now let's see why we need to understand this. Picking up in verse, 18? Alright, so he went and found his brothers in Dothan, and they saw him from afar. And before he came near, they conspired against him to kill him. And they said to one another, "Here comes this dreamer. Come, let us kill him and throw him into one of these pits. And then we will say that a fierce animal has devoured him, and we will see what becomes of his dreams." But when Reuben heard it, he rescued him out of their hands, saying, "Let us not take his life." And Reuben said to them, "Shed no blood. Throw him into one of the pits in the wilderness, but do not lay a hand on him, that he might rescue him out of their hand and restore him to the father." So Joseph came to his brothers. They stripped him of his robe, the robe of many colors that he wore. They took him and threw him into the pit. The pit was empty and there was no water in it. Then they sat down to eat. And looking up, they saw a caravan of Ishmaelites coming from Gilead, with their camels bearing gum, balm, myrrh, on their way to carry it down to Egypt. Then Judah said to his brothers, "What profit is it if we kill our brother and conceal his blood? Let us sell him to the Ishmaelites, and let our hand not be upon him, for he is our brother, our own flesh." Keep that phrase in mind, he is our brother. And his brothers listened to him, and the Midianite traders passed by. They drew Joseph out and lifted him into the pit, and sold him to the Ishmaelites for 20 shekels of silver, and they took him to Egypt. When Reuben returned, to the pit, they saw that Joseph was not in the pit. He tore his clothes and returned to his brothers and said, "The boy is gone. Where shall I go?" He was looking for him now. Then they took Joseph's robe, slaughtered a goat, and dipped the robe in blood. And then they sent the robe of many colors and brought it to their father and said, "This we found. Please identify whether or not it is your son's robe or not." And he identified it and said, "It is my son's robe. A fierce animal has devoured him. Joseph, without doubt, torn to pieces." And Jacob tore his garments and put on sackcloth on his loins and mourned for his son for many days. All his sons and his daughters rose up to comfort him, but he refused to be comforted and said, "No, I shall go down to Sheol with my son mourning." Thus his father wept for him. Meanwhile, the Midianites had sold him in Egypt to Potiphar, the officer of Pharaoh, the captain of his guard. So this is that last section where we see. Remember, Judah says something about my brother. We see here this juxtaposition of personal identification with the story. And they saw this, and they took their brother's coat. Then later, what they say is, when they take the coat to their dad, "Is this not your son's coat? Is this not your son's coat?" I watch a lot of Criminal Minds. Really love that show. It's a wonderful show. And what we learned in Criminal Minds is that there's a phrase called dehumanization. What they have done is backed off from the humanity of the story. Earlier, we'll take our brother's coat, dip it in blood, and deliver it to our father. Now, they come to dad, knowing what they've done is not right. They have distanced themselves from the story and said, "Is this not your son's coat? Is this not your son's coat?" Dad gets upset. One of the most interesting things that I see here is we see a battle between brothers, but not just between Joseph and his brothers. But who was traveling in this caravan? It was a caravan of Ishmaelites. Ishmael, the illegitimate son of Abraham. We're told that these two will be at war with each other forever. So we see the Ishmaelite sons, and then we see Jacob's sons, or the descendants of Isaac, so God's chosen sons. The legitimate sons of Abraham versus the illegitimate son. So we see this colliding. So Joseph wasn't just sold into slavery by his brothers, but he was sold into slavery to his cousins by his brothers. Where we see the war between these two brothers, the seed of Abraham, the legitimate seed and the illegitimate seed, being juxtaposed against one another. Now we see the obedient son trapped, sold into slavery for 20 pieces of silver, and then we see his brothers distancing themselves in remorse, which sounds a lot like Judas selling Jesus for 30 pieces of silver, going back and throwing the silver and hanging himself in remorse, distancing himself from what he's done. One of the most important things that we see in here is Reuben, the character Reuben in the story. You see, Reuben hears the plot to kill him and says, "Wait, hold up. He's daddy's favorite. Who's number two? Not sure. But if I rescue number one and bring him back safe and tell dad what these brothers have done, I can become an obedient brother and I can be number two." What we see here is Reuben's attempt for renewed connection to dad. Right? Renewed favor with dad. Which sounds a lot like the story that you hear if you're ever chatting with someone and you start to talk to them about, "Oh, you go to church. Oh, okay, you go to that church. Oh, what do you guys believe? Okay, but oh, you believe there's a place called hell. You believe that a loving God would actually send people to hell? Because here's what I believe I'm a good person. And I believe I haven't really ever done anything that would deserve judgment. You see, I believe that by my good works, by my good actions, I have right standing. I have renewed favor with God. Yeah, maybe, okay, I've heard the story. You know, Adam did what God said not to do. I've heard that story. But you know, I've not really ever, God's never ever told me to actually not do anything. He specifically told Adam not to do that. And Adam did it. I've never really, so God doesn't have any reason. Sounds like a lot of self-justification here for Reuben, right? I didn't hate him. They hated him. I was just there. I don't know about you, but I pulled the I didn't do it, I was just there when I was a kid. Anybody else? Nobody else? I'm the only one. I was just there, Dad. I didn't do it. Spray paint got on the wall, but I didn't do it. Right? Don't look at my hand. I didn't get on my hand. I got on my hand because I was trying to wipe it off. One time we were at the grocery store. You guys up here have, at the grocery stores, they have those big old towers of like Brock's candy. It's like free candy. Right? It was like honor system candy. Like a little bin you're supposed to put the nickel in and then you get the little red bear. Man, one time my dad saw me chewing something in the grocery store. He made me walk up to the register. He didn't let me put the nickel in the thing. He made me walk up to the register and tell the woman that I ate candy from the little free candy tower without paying for it. And now that I remember back, I'm thinking about it, the face that woman gave my dad was crazy. Because the woman at the register understood that was a free candy tower. Right? Because that's where she got her free candy. Right? But my dad making me do right, teaching me right from wrong. See, Reuben can't be justified by his attempt to do the right thing. See, it's not the right thing if you wait until later to do the right thing. Right? Reuben should have stood up for his brother before his brother ended up. Reuben should have gone to war for his brother. Kind of like we see a misguided Peter in that very same garden go to war for Jesus. Right? Bunch of guards around him. He pulls out a sword, cuts off an ear. What are you going to do? What are you going to do, little man, against all these people? But at least Peter was standing for what he thought was right. And Jesus says, come on, man. Scooped up the ear. This is going to happen. This is going to happen. What we see is that this had to happen. It had to happen. So what can we take away from Genesis 37 that will lead us into the rest of this? The first thing that we take away is this. Obedience does not guarantee ease or success. Or success or ease. There are some that will tell you, the more you believe in God, the more you pray, and the more you do the right thing, the better things will happen for you. Raise your hand if you have prayed hard, believed, obeyed, and bad things happened to you. Right? Obedience is not a guarantee of success. Obedience. So here's what we do in my house. I've been trying to teach my kids right from wrong. I've been trying to teach them how to do right. So what we say is there's three steps. Really, it's one step. With two different ways to do it, right? We obey. Yeah, to obey, you have to do things the right way. And to do things the right way, you have to do them right away, and you have to do them all the way. Right? Joseph goes to Shechem in obedience to his father. Found out his brothers were in Dothan. Was it obedience if he stopped short in Shechem and went back? No. Because he said, go find your brothers. I think they're in Shechem. He could not have stopped short. He had to go all the way to Dothan to find his brothers. So he could bring back a report on how the flock was doing. You have to do things right away. Delayed obedience is not obedience. When God says do, you do. And then you have to do them all the way. You have to see it through. You have to finish it. Check this out. This story of Joseph, this is not a feel-good story wherein the hero returns victorious. This is a tale of redemption in which Joseph pays an unthinkable price for a purpose greater than himself. Right? Without knowledge of what was happening next, right? If Joseph had been privy to the plan, here's what's going to happen. You're going to go here, this is going to happen, it's going to seem bad, you're going here, it's going to seem worse, then you go here, it's going to start to feel like it's better, then it's actually gets worse again. But then, one day, it gets better. I promise you it's going to get better. Maybe Joseph says, all right, I can endure some hardship, I can endure some pain for a little while, with the promise that it gets better. But here's the deal, Joseph, it's not just going to get better for you. But you're going to go through all of that hard stuff, and it's actually going to get better for all of us. Right? You're going to save the world. Okay. I mean, it's going to be hard for a little while. Like, how hard? Like walking up to the register and giving the girl a nickel when the dad could just let me stick in the can? Hard, or... By the way, when you're 7, that's real hard. Real hard. You had to pay an unthinkable price. And then the second thing that we can take away here is that God's electing work is not based on man's performance. It's not based on man's performance. Take a look at the Ishmaelites that Joseph is sold to. Did Ishmael do anything right or wrong that Isaac didn't do or did do? No. God chose Isaac because God chose Isaac. Then we see later Isaac's sons, Esau, Jacob, who stands to be the chosen son? Who stands for the inheritance? Esau, Isaac's favorite son. Who got the inheritance? Jacob. Did Jacob do the right thing? Was Jacob an upstanding young man to get it? No. Jacob lied. Jacob tricked. Jacob snuck in and stole the inheritance. God's choice of you has nothing to do with you. God's choice of you has everything to do with God. Over in John chapter 6, Jesus is speaking about being the bread of life. When he says that every one that the Father gives me will be mine. I won't lose any of those who the Father gives me. But the Father won't give me anyone who chooses to come on their own. He only gives me those whom he chooses. It's not based on your work. But here's the deal. I will stand to make you holy and righteous. Not because of your goodness and not because of your sin, but because God is holy and just and you are not. I will stand holy and just. So anyone who proclaims me, the Father has moved on and they have chosen. And he has chosen, and I won't lose one of you. This last phrase. All Joseph's brother and father, for that matter, can see is Joseph's dream point to his superiority. And as a result, when they see the young man God has designated to save their lives walking toward them in obedience to his father, their first inclination. We've seen that time and time and time again over the last 9 weeks. These parables where Jesus is teaching, surrounded by the religious elite, hearing that their way to God is not the way to God. That there is a different way to God. And that way to God is not through our obedience, but that way to God is through Jesus himself. And when they see him, they become angry. And when they see him over there with a crowd, they have to come in so that they can hear what he's saying. And they become angry to the point where they have no other option than to kill him. Every time they see Jesus, all they see is a person who stands in their way. Someone who's standing as though he's above them. someone who stands with the way, someone who stands as the way, in contrast to what had been previously known as the way. Just like Joseph was seen by his brothers, hated to the point of death, Jesus stood, seen by his brothers, and hated to the point of death. The story of Joseph does not point us to a do this, do that, get good stuff. The story of Joseph tells us that there is a destination in store for you that you do not want. It is famine, it is death, and it is separation. Interesting part of this story is that Joseph leaves the promised land and will never return. Never return. His dead bones will be carried back into the promised land during the Exodus. Joseph left everything behind, just like Jesus left everything behind. And Jesus went back to prepare a place for you. And he will actually come back in his fullness for you. But not because of you, but in spite of you. The story of Joseph doesn't point us to behavior modification. It doesn't point us to a list of do's and don'ts, but it points us to our need for the obedient brother. It points us to the way to stand, to live in the love of a loving father. It's all around the room. We just close our time together by bowing our heads and closing our eyes. Just an opportunity to think. An opportunity to think. The scriptures make it very clear that this story and none of the stories before them were about the character whom we're told about. But this whole story is about Jesus. If the whole story is about Jesus, the question that immediately comes to my mind is your story about Jesus? If you are to appropriately live out your subplot in God's story, is your story pointing the way to Jesus? More than a collection of stories of behavior modification and appropriate ways for living, these stories point us to the need to live a life that points to Jesus. Just like Joseph's life points forward to Jesus, my life is to point backward to the cross of Jesus and forward to the glorification in heaven with Jesus. So we may stand in one of two different places this morning. We stand in one side, those who have stepped into the love of the Father through the cross of the obedient Son. We find ourselves made new, made whole, made right. And that's the question for you. Is your story about your obedient brother? And if it's not, what do we need to do? We'll be starting our small groups back up again in September. No, in August. In August. One of the things that we're going to do is we're going to line up our small group teaching with the teaching that goes on in the children's ministry on the weekends. And if your small group is so inclined, we're going to take a 3-year study through the entire Bible. So this fall, we're going to study through the book of Genesis, looking through to see how the entire book of Genesis points forward to Jesus. I don't want us to be a people who read the Bible as though it is a moral code for us to live by. This is not a list of do's and don'ts. This is a book of did. Not I did, Jesus did. And if Jesus did, now I can do. And so we're going to take this study through the whole scripture, seeing how the entire Bible points to Jesus. And so this next week for those of us who find ourselves in right standing with the loving Father through the cross of our obedient brother. Read Genesis chapter 39, the story of Joseph and Potiphar's wife. Read it every day. Pray and ask God how we see Jesus in this text. Maybe there's someone here this morning who doesn't stand in right relationship with our loving Father through the cross of our obedient brother Jesus. I want you to know that there's an invitation for you to come. God's choosing of you has nothing to do with you. It has nothing to do with your behavior. It has nothing to do with your actions. It has everything in the world to do with Jesus' obedience on behalf of you. So if you want to know how to step into this renewed relationship with our loving Father through the cross of our obedient brother Jesus, come after service and talk to me. I'd love to introduce you to this family. This family who is being rescued from devastation and famine. Being rescued from a spiritual starvation. Now we're going to go back to some musical worship time. We lift up the praises of our King, the things that He has done for us. But I want you to also read this week Genesis 38 in addition to 39. And I think that your reading of Genesis 38 will tell you why the story is not a story about Jacob. You see, Genesis 38 has nothing to do with Jacob. It has everything in the world to do with his brother Judah. Judah's the one who looked and saw a way to make some money off his brother. And immediately after this, Judah leaves home, broken by the things that he's done, knowing that he is in need of forgiveness and redemption. The rules that have been placed down not to marry these people around us. Well, Judah goes, and I've already broken these rules, and go break these. Chapter 38 is how we know that this story is about Jesus. Because Jesus is not a descendant of the line of Joseph. Jesus is a descendant of the line of Judah. Judah needs to be redeemed and restored so that you can have redemption and restoration through Jesus. Judah has to hit the bottom so that his rescue can provide for you a rescue. Joseph's story is not about Joseph, it's about Jesus. Your story about you, or is it about Jesus? Because Jesus is calling you out of the boat. You'll know whether or not your story is about you or about Him, and whether or not you step out of the boat. Disregarding the wind and the waves, will you step out and walk with Him? Will His praise be your song? Will your life sing of His praises? Or will you hesitantly hold on to